From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on March 10th in Washington State, where a member of a church choir showed up for rehearsal. With concerns about COVID-19 in mind, the Skagit Valley Chorale in Mount Vernon refrained from hugging or shaking hands that day. But according to the New York Times, when rehearsal began, they sat in their regular seats, just a few inches apart, 6 to 10 inches apart, much closer than the recommended 6 feet. The members also shared snacks that evening. This was all before the state's stay-at-home order was put into effect. During the rehearsal, one member who was experiencing cold-like symptoms unknowingly spread the coronavirus to 52 out of 60 fellow singers. Two of those singers later died. That incident is one of several around the world where the virus has spread among singers in choral settings pre-shutdown. In Amsterdam, 102 out of 130 members of a choir contracted COVID-19 after a performance, and four people associated with that choir died. In Austria, 43 out of 44 people attending a choir seminar tested positive for the virus. So why does the virus seem to spread so rampantly in such settings? Scientific data, and I know a lot of this research is evolving, but some of the latest data that we have seen shows that when singers project their powerful voices, microscopic particles can burst from their mouths. Those droplets are carried in the rush of air created from the singing. And there's an idea that they can linger and float in the air for at least an hour or more. Knowing this, experts around the world have generally recommended choirs don't gather in person until a vaccine or a treatment is widely available. But as our guests will discuss this hour, singing over Zoom, I've tried that with my son. It's hard to do it. There's a lag. Virtual platforms, not quite the same. And even putting tech glitches aside, singing in groups in person can be a cultural and spiritual experience. Chorus America reports that 1 in 6 Americans over the age of 18 sings in a chorus or a group of some kind. So as we enter phase 4 of reopening in New York, where arts organizations will be allowed to bring people together again, what will happen with choirs? Will singers be back together in person, perhaps physically distanced and wearing masks? What's happening nationally and around the world with this? Will it be a year or more before people can sing together in large groups again? This hour, our guests discuss how the pandemic has affected singing in group settings, an issue that's especially affecting a so-called singing city like Rochester. Our guests include Lee Wright, Director of Music Ministry at Downtown United Presbyterian Church. Lee, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me, Evan.
Welcome to Janet Galvan, who is a professor of performance studies and director of choral activities and conducting at Ithaca College. Hello, Janet.
Hi, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Nice to have you. Nice to have Dr. Scott Stratton-Smith, family medicine specialist with Rochester Regional Health. Doctor, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Brenda Tremblay, host of WXXI's Classical 91.5 and, of course, a member of a local choir. I'm always hearing you sing. How many choirs have you been in, Brenda Tremblay?
I have been in all the choirs. I've been in the Rochester Oratorio Society and the Eastern Rochester Chorus, Madrigalia. It's one of my pleasures to sing with Lee Wright in the choir that he founded, First Inversion. And Evan, it's nice to not see you. I'm glad to be here.
That's the most direct thing anybody has said to me during this pandemic. I want
to
say
to be safe.
I want to say at the outset of this program here, our goal this hour is to really kind of get our heads around a couple of things: the impact that this pandemic has had, the concern with these stories, the evolving understanding of the risk, and maybe the plan going forward. And it is not to fearmonger here. I mean, I don't want to fearmonger. I want to be as accurate as we can be. Because what we knew in March is a lot less than what we know now. And so that's why there's a doctor on the program. And I'm going to start with Dr. Scott Stratton-Smith. You know, we look back to those March stories that got so much attention. I understand why public health leaders in this country and around the world said, hey, we're going to close X, Y, and Z, and especially choir groups, because that looked pretty clear to them. How much do we know, have we learned since then, and where are we at in sort of understanding the impact of singing in close quarters?
Well, I think it is evolving, as you said. I don't think any of us have all the answers around COVID, and I think that will take quite a long time for us to get our heads around all of it. But certainly, I think we have come to understand even more that singing, being in a small, closed space with other people close together, increases our risk for exposure to COVID and then contracting the disease. And those cases you rattled off at the beginning, you know, those statistics are pretty, they are pretty scary. And the more I've thought about that, I wonder how many other choir groups did meet and we didn't actually hear
sure.
about COVID cases. That kind of struck me. You know, certainly these came to the forefront for any of us that do musical groups and were very frightening at the beginning. You know, in the time I had to do research, I didn't find a lot that said, well, now we show that it's safe. You know, I didn't find much of that. So I think that certainly the idea of being, if possible, outside where there's air moving, those sorts of things do lower the risk. But the whole process of singing, taking a deep breath and expelling that air from deep in our lungs, does create these aerosolized particles that can hang in the air and can linger for quite a long period. And I guess the thing that I've been thinking about is when someone coughs or sneezes, there's those droplets that go into the air that you can, if you're sitting close enough to someone, you'll feel that hit you, which is kind of gross to think about. Okay. But the aerosolized particles that really are the concern here, more than the cough, because you can feel the cough, is those aerosolized particles are more like if someone's sitting across from the across the room from you, and they're wearing a strong perfume, and you can smell it. Mm-hmm. You may not be close to them physically, but if you can smell their perfume, it's possible that those aerosolized particles from that person are getting close to you and putting you at risk.
Well, and so let's talk about if there are creative solutions here, because, you know, back in March, even into April, you know, some listeners said, well, you know, Evan, you just want to shut down society forever. I think by now it's pretty clear that I am in the reopen, reopen, reopen with intelligence and safety in mind when it is logical mode. And I would love to see creative solutions, and I'll turn to Lee Wright first here. So why don't you take me through the last few months and how this kind of news has hit you and some of your peers and colleagues, Lee, and if we're moving in a direction of finding ways to do this, to get together, to sing safely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will have it known that we did have a choir rehearsal on March 11th, Wednesday, March 11th, the day after the Super Spreader event in Washington here at Downtown Presbyterian Church. Again, it was before we were in lockdown mode, and we were thinking about it. We were, you know, hand sanitizing and not sharing food and not shaking hands and not hugging. But we also weren't 6 feet apart, and thank God, you know, no one in my choir has become ill with COVID, and I'm extremely thankful for that. When I first read that article of the news out of Washington, my heart sank for the singers and for the director, and I thought, my God, I can't imagine being responsible for gathering people, for calling a rehearsal or having a performance and have people die. It's unthinkable. And so, of course, that was very devastating news. And, you know, we've all been mourning this for the last few months. But as you say, I think there are lots of creative ways. And, you know, musicians are some of the most creative people I know. And there's been webinar after webinar about amazing things people are doing, and using technology, and you know, they're really very inspiring the ways people are being connected with each other. That said, of course, we understand that singing together whatever way you can with technology is not the same as being with people in the room. And even being with people in the room, spreading far apart, maybe wearing a mask, still provides musical challenges that that make it very difficult for us to achieve the type of musical ensemble that we may have been used to. And so, you know, all in all, there is a lot to mourn. But at the same time, I have to say for myself, here at the church, we've been making audio recordings for our congregation every week. And I've met in the sanctuary, the big We have a rather large sanctuary space with a very high ceiling, and I generally meet with one or two other musicians, and we socially distance. We don't face each other when we're singing. The ventilation fan is running, which adds a little noise to the recording, but it's what we, you know, feel is the safest thing for us to do. And I am just so thankful to have had the opportunity over the last month to make music with a few people on a regular basis and keep that going for myself. And while I very much miss directing a choir, doing small ensembles and working on my violin skills and my piano skills and some other musical other aspects of my musical life have kept me going.
Whew. Janet Galvan, same question. How that news landed with you and whether you see sort of some creative solutions emerging?
Well, of course, it was terrifying to read that. And to be honest, had I known what I know now, I would not have attended the ACDA regional conference in Rochester. And you know, luckily, I have been fine. But I've been reading daily about the effects of COVID and what is being done. And I'm in a very different situation from Lee because I work at a college, and you know, it's a large school of music. And we're dealing with young people coming from a lot of different places. But what we did this spring, we immediately went online, and we actually premiered a composition virtually. And so I did two virtual performances. And yes, there were challenges, but I learned so much about how to do it going through this process. And I did it as a collaborative effort with a colleague of mine who was leading a class in editing, sound editing. So I found what I was doing a lot of the things through editing that I normally would do in the rehearsal, but we actually were able to have somewhat satisfying rehearsals over Zoom, particularly when I was working with sections. And, you know, I hear a lot of people being very, very negative about the virtual choir. But for me, it's not, as Lee said, it's not going to replace being in person with the singers. But I think rather than trying to look at it as a replacement, I see it as an expansion. And to be honest, a lot of our audience really loved the cool factor of the video. We had, you know, panels flying in, and I mean, it was really beautiful and very touching to see all these people come together. And my students likened it to going to a movie premiere, because normally we have a sense of what it's going to be like when we go into a choral performance, but they really didn't. They saw the video for the first time with the audience, and we did a live broadcast that started in my living room with me making announcements. So I just see it as an expansion. So I think when people say, well, what's better about virtual choir or live choir? I think we can all agree we prefer live choir. So I think that's the wrong question. And I really am, I'm erring on the side of caution because of the long-term effects that they have. There was just an article out yesterday and one 3 days ago about how, you know, you might never get the lung capacity back. For me, that's too big a risk.
If you get COVID, yeah.
Yeah, that's just too big a risk.
Yeah.
We are known as super sprayers, and right now what we know is we don't know, but luckily there are some, and you might, this may be a later question, but there are two studies that are being led, one out of the University of Colorado by Shelley Miller, to study the aerosol rates that our friend just mentioned earlier, and then one at Colorado State University identifying mitigating strategies to reduce the infection spread. So I think, for me personally, because of my situation, I'm erring on the side of caution. I think we're in this together, and I am not in the business of condemning or judging anyone else's decisions. I think we all have to look at our situation and circumstance. But for me right now, the answer is virtual until we know more.
And, but just a brief follow-up to that point, Janet, on virtual. I thought early in the pandemic there was a very misleading video that John Krasinski put out as part of his program, Some Good News, in which, you know, a girl was going to be able to go see Hamilton and then couldn't during the pandemic. So he got Lin-Manuel Miranda and all of these performers to do Hamilton performance via Zoom. And in the video, boy, it looks easy. The harmonies are tight. Everybody's together. And then, so then I call up my son on Zoom. I grab my guitar. He's, you know, my little dude's playing violin. We were going to play together. And we just could not do it. Like, it was, there's too many, you know, sort of glitches or lags. And so I asked some friends in music. I said, can you do that? And they said, it's almost impossible. It's just very, very hard. Is there technology that allows you to harmonize together in different settings that doesn't have a lag, that you can do it tightly, Janet?
Not at this point.
Okay.
But I, look, there are brilliant minds out there working like crazy to make this a possibility. I mean, that's the thing. I'm with Lee. There are so many creative and brilliant people in the field. And for me, in the university setting, I took this as a challenge to say, okay, what can we learn in this situation that we don't have time for when we're doing live things? So I just took that the semester that way. And trust me, this will not be the last time that people will be doing recording for, you know, for a performance. And in fact, Opera Ithaca right now, they're in the movie business. They are doing a virtual opera of Johnny Skeeky, and it will be released in September. And my daughter she's an opera singer, so she was involved in a workshop of a new opera with Fort Worth Opera. So she was in Florida. John Holliday was in Wisconsin. And, you know, they were workshopping a brand new opera. So I think this, some of this virtual will be actually what we're exploring now will expand our art and will make some things possible that perhaps weren't.
Brenda Tremblay, same question for you. I mean, I know you're a performer, you're a host for Classical 91.5, you attend performances.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it had to be very hard to hear that news in March.
It was, for sure. I was just going to talk a little bit about virtual choir. I did have an experience, and for listeners who don't know how that works, basically, if you're in a virtual choir, you set your phone up in front of you and put it on photo and video mode, like a mirror, so you see your own face, right? And then you get an accompaniment track, which you put on headphones in your ears, and then you make a video of yourself singing along with the accompaniment in your head, and all the video is just you. And then you email that or send that somehow to a brilliant engineer, like Janet described, and they weave it together in a virtual choir. So I did this. I did this a few weeks ago for a friend of mine whose husband was very sick, and he wanted to hear this particular song. And so I set my phone up and I pressed record, and I listened to the accompaniment in my head, and I recorded myself and just singing the alto part alone. It is the loneliest kind of karaoke you can imagine. And then after I finished, I looked up and my husband was standing in the doorway, and he said, you know, we could put that through auto-tune if you want. I mean, before you send it. So anyway, it was just sort of a funny moment, like, this is not working for me. I think what makes singing in a choir so dangerous is also what I love about singing in the choir, and that is the intimacy of it. I mean, when you're pressed together in a group of people, you feel their body heat. Yeah, you smell the perfumes and the deodorants and the way the people around you smell, your breath, you feel them taking in breath. In fact, they've done studies and shown in some choirs, people actually line up their heartbeats, and it's a very, very physical and wonderful experience and very transformative. And that's what I really miss. To me, the technology is a way to cope with it, but it's also a cold flame I mean, I was happy to help out my friend with a virtual choir, but it's not something that I necessarily see myself doing very much in the future.
Do you right now feel like if we can move into phase four and we see some creative performances, you're going to feel comfortable to, even just as an attendee, to go watch? What are sort of the guidelines you would want to see followed, Brenda?
Well, yeah, you know, it'd have to be outside for sure. There'd have to be excellent circulation. And we're actually in a very squishy area right now because there are places. Montage, for example, is reopening for indoor shows. There are places that are going to be having live music in closed spaces. Theater camps maybe are announcing they're going to be having things going on. And I totally agree with Janet that there's definitely a lot of room for caution here. We don't know. And singing is a very powerful thing. It's a very physical thing. It's like sports, you know. And if it's not safe, I don't think I would necessarily want to be in a choir. I do know, I have friends that have tried outdoor rehearsals under trees or in park shelters. And they're literally standing, you know, 10 or 20 feet apart from each other. And that's also sort of a dissatisfying experience. I know I sound like a downer, but it's that closeness and intimacy that makes singing in a choir so wonderful.
Oh, so that's interesting. All right, so I want to ask our other guests if they would feel the same. Lee Wright, would you feel, if you're outside and everyone in the choir is 10, 15 feet apart, and it's not that, you know, that feeling that Brenda described of being really close and the voices are rising up real tight together, you're trying to make it work that way, would it feel dissatisfying to you?
Well, you know, as much as I can't say I've ever gone to choir rehearsal with a hope of, you know, smelling people.
new frontiers here, Lee. You're here to smell someone's deodorant.
I have, as a choir director, said on more than one occasion, I should be able to feel your sh or on me as you, you know, enunciate that clearly as you sing. And, of course, you know, during this time, I've thought, wow, I guess I won't be saying that
no.
again for a while. And, you know, maybe it's going to, you know, we're going to have come into an age where we hear choral recordings that have very unclear diction for that reason. but anyway, about feeling safe and about losing that intimacy, it is hard to lose the intimacy, but it does give us a challenge. And you know, I've been thinking of this time as a challenge for us to develop skills. As Janet said, you know, this virtual choir thing is an expansion of what we do. And these creative things, even if we don't like them, are making us bigger, better. They're challenging us to think of other ways to do what we do. And, you know, and directly to the question of being spread out, you know, I have to say when I've tried to sing in close harmony with two other people and we're, you know, 10 or so feet apart, not singing towards each other, it's been tricky, and it's been a situation where we, you know, we do our best and then we listen to the recording. And of course the microphones are hearing us better than we are. And so intonation becomes an issue, and really being able to stay together rhythmically, is certainly harder, but, you know, that's only going to make our ears better. If we have to learn to sing more spread out. And so I take it as you know, it's not a welcome challenge, but it is a way in which we can grow. So if that's the only way to sing safely together is being spread out, then I say let's do it and open up our ears.
Okay. Dr. Stratton Smith, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. I think that we all yearn for that time when we can all be together and do the choral thing that we all love that's being described here. What a joyful and tearful experience that will be. But I think to Lee's point, I think that maybe we have to accept that perhaps our diction and our pitch and our being completely in sync rhythmically, we might have to accept a slightly lesser quality than what we're used to. I will say, being in Rochester now about 25 years, I'm so impressed with the level of musicianship across this city. And maybe we're just so used to these incredibly high standards that maybe we have to step back a little bit and say, well, maybe it wasn't perfectly together, but hey, we still made a joyful noise, and it was good for our souls. It was good for our social, communal well-being, and that's good enough for now.
Janet Galvan, what do you think?
Well, I mean, let's be honest. I live in Ithaca. There is not going to be a lot of outside rehearsing. So while that might work for my friends in California, I really don't think it's a realistic thing for me to consider. And, I mean, you don't want to be depressed about it. So I'm looking at other options. And to be honest, I'm not sure that I feel safe. And I love my students. I love my choir. I like being alive. I like not having a diminished lung capacity or scars on my lungs. And I'm also working with young people who are looking for their whole lifetime ahead. And from my mind, I'm thinking being online for up to a year or maybe beyond is worth it for the future of singing and for each individual. I can't look at percentages. Oh, well, only four people had their lung scars. You know, that each one of those is a very important individual. And so I am really, I am erring on the side of extreme caution. You know, I have one student who lost her father, a former student, very early on to COVID. And the thing is, you know, that we not asymptomatic people can be spreading this disease. And I hate to say that, but I think we will survive it. I think we are entering a new age. I think we are going to come out just as was just mentioned. I think we're going to value things much higher than perfection. And in fact, I told my students going into the virtual choir, I said, this is a process. We are entering this to learn. And if this is 50% of what you normally do, I will be happy. Of course, I later laughed after staying up till 3 a.m. editing and said, yeah, I don't know who I thought was speaking. But I was quite happy and had tears rolling down my face, you know, just ugly crying when I first saw the finished product. It was just so wonderful to see people singing again. So this note wasn't perfectly blended or didn't have quite enough lift. It really didn't matter to me.
Yeah, no, I hear that. And let's hear from a little bit more a listener about the intimacy of the experience. A phone call from Fred in Rochester. Go ahead, Fred.
Hi, Aaron. Thanks for taking my call. I have sung in a church choir or choirs for 20 years. I've done a cappella work. I've done a great big ensemble work. And the intimacy is one of the things that I miss about not going to church. But is it a large miss? No, it's not. It's just a lamentation of sorts. But I just wanted to say, one of the best choirs that I think that ever you'll see that shows the intimacy is listening and watching the St. Olaf College touring choir sing, who during their entire performance, while they are singing, are holding hands with one another and swaying back and forth with a rhythm that is hypnotic, almost as hypnotic as the music that they are singing. And if you ever get a chance to talk to one of their members, you will find that some of the most important parts of their lives are those 4 years that they're singing at St. Olaf's. And there's a current, well, he just graduated, Jonathan Madden from Incarnate Word Lutheran Church was their principal pianist as a student. And it's thrilling to be able to do this. Do I miss it? Yes. Do I welcome it back with open arms? Am I going to do something stupid to do it? Not in a world.
Yeah.
But thank you ever so much.
Yeah.
This is a great conversation.
Well, Fred, thank you for that. I mean, it makes me think of what Brenda was saying. And you know, Brenda, Fred's comment reminds me, this is maybe a memory that I had suppressed. I actually was in a show choir in high school. I wore a green sequin vest as part of a show choir, all because there was a girl that I wanted to date who was doing choreography, and she was in show choir. And it's amazing what motivates you when you're 16, 17 years old. But
absolutely.
But those kind of performances are a non-starter right now. So when Fred talks about, you know, performers holding hands as they perform, that ain't happening. And Brenda, you said, you know, it's interesting when you say, though, Brenda, all of those things matter so much to the performance, and yet you're not sitting here saying that you want to push us back into that right away or even anytime soon.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Not at all. I will be interested to hear. I'd like to hear from Janet a little bit about some of the creative thinking on a college campus. Mm. You know, you're working with choirs of, you know, 100 or more people. But, yeah, I had a moment the other day. I actually I have a side job as a music director in a little church on the west side, a little Episcopal church in Brockport. And I have been rehearsing a small church choir for about almost 20 years now. I mean, 10 people, really small choir. And our church has been completely shut down for the last 3 months. And I had a moment the other day. I walked in on Tuesday, and I decided to pop into the choir room. And I opened the door, and I literally ran into a cobweb. And, you know, I could see the music lying around and the folders sort of abandoned on the chairs. It was like King Tut's tomb, you know, frozen in time. And this wave of melancholy washed over me. And it wasn't so much about the music making, because I have found, like Lee, other ways to make music and satisfy that. But it was the community of those people. When you sing in a choir, and I think a lot of singers will tell you, you become part of someone's story. You see them a few minutes before rehearsal. You hear about their health concerns. You learn about their kids. You become part of their story. They know your story week after week, year after year, and poof, so many relationships became suspended in time on March 10th or March 9th or whenever it was that we all kind of shut down. And I miss that just as much as I do the actual art of music making. But what we're having conversations now about reopening my Anglican church and what that will look like. And obviously, we're not going to have a choir. And in fact, we don't want to encourage singing because it is dangerous in our church. So what do we do? So we're talking about things like passing out tambourines and woodblocks and having people move and make music with percussion instruments that don't involve spit. You know, we're talking about using the language of hymns and sacred music in ways that keep that vocabulary in the air. For example, saying Amazing Grace, you know, having that tune in the air in a way that's not metrical so that people aren't tempted to sing, because people will sing. It's just really hard to not sing if you hear your favorite song come on the radio and you're driving in the car. And the same is true in church. People that have dementia and don't even recognize their children know all 6 verses to Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. Mm-hmm. You know, music is a very, very powerful thing. So we're having those conversations about singing in church and how to make that safe even as churches reopened.
Well, I'm way late for a break. I do want to hear before the hour is up Professor Galvan's views on maybe a creative way that college campuses are going to create music, because I think the consensus view right now is that one way or another, students are going back to school in the fall at most levels. And so the question is, you know, what does that look like? So, but I'm losing time fast. And we've got a caller on the line who is a professor of music and a singer who is recovering from COVID. So let's take our only break of the hour, and we're going to get back to your phone calls and so much more with our guests. You just heard Brenda Tremblay, host for WXXI's Classical 91.5, and of course, a member of local choirs. Dr. Scott Stratton-Smith is with us. He's a family medicine specialist with Rochester Regional Health. Professor Janet Galvan from Ithaca College is with us. Lee Wright is the director of music ministry at Downtown United Presbyterian Church. And we are right back with your phone calls next. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, Rochester City Council passed the city budget recently, and the issue of defunding police was a hot topic. We're joined by members of council who discussed their votes and their perspectives on the best ways to address police reform from a government level. Then in our second hour, will capitalism survive the pandemic? We talk with the author of The Healing Organization, Awakening the Conscience of Business to Help Save the World. Talk with you Friday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson in Brighton. This is Charity. Go ahead, Charity.
Hello, and thank you for putting this wonderful discussion on the air. It's just wonderful to hear from all of you. I called in just with a couple of quick comments. Number one is I'm in week 5 of recovering from COVID, and I had a very, very mild case, but I still wake up every single day coughing and wondering what things are going to look like at the end of this. And I have a vocal performance degree from Oberlin. I'm a very passionate singer, choir director, and it's horrible to sort of live in that space of not knowing what's coming in terms of being able to cope with the physical after effects of even the most mild case of COVID. So it's great to hear people sort of reflecting some caution around that. And very quickly, the second comment is that people are quick to think about, you know, the horrors of getting infected, getting sick. But beyond that is the isolation and quarantine orders. When we were quarantined, my wife's a geriatrician, our kids had to do all the cooking. No one could leave our property for 2 weeks. People had to bring us our groceries. All of these sort of after effects of getting together, if one person in your choir or your classroom, which is what I'm looking at, all get sick, it actually can have a significant effect even above and beyond whether or not they contract the virus. Mm. So I'm delighted to hear some of the amazing things that people are doing virtually. I'm looking at doing similar things in my Arles Coast classes in the fall because I think it really will be worth it.
Charity,
so thank you.
Can I just ask you a quick question?
Sure.
Yeah, so because I think you're making such an important point about COVID itself. When you say you're 5 weeks in, and you had a very mild case. The word mild, the New York Times reporter who first reported in this country about COVID regrets using the word mild because he says even mild cases can have after effects. They can be pretty rough. It just essentially means not hospitalized. It could be anything in that category.
Yes.
What were the worst of your, what were the worst of your symptoms?
Thank you for asking that question, and what a great point. I was highly, like, really in the thick of it for about 11 days. I didn't get the, you know, 104-degree Chris Cuomo fever, but in the midst of it, I had horrendous coughs that were keeping me up all night, very significant insomnia, fevers and chills constantly. And again, this is a, you know, I never had shortness of breath, but it was 10 to 11 days of getting up and walking to the bathroom and back was what I had in me for like 5 hours. And so even the most mild case that doesn't register on a you need to see the doctor sort of basis was that debilitating. And I'm not to the point where I can put, you know, 4 or 5 things on my to-do list. I can work for a good 3 hours in the morning on various class preparations. And then I'm down for like another hour or two. Mm. Or I start coughing. I'm on an inhaler now to help the cough because it hasn't let up. So that's, you know, those kinds of after effects, as you were saying, mild is a bit of a misnomer, because it, even without the most significant or, perhaps life endangering symptoms, you just still end up really depleted and just really unable, to function, unable to sleep, which simply sort of, you know, magnifies all the effects of everything else.
Well, good luck to you. Thank you for sharing your story with us. Really
oh,
appreciate
it. Oh, my pleasure. And thank you to you all.
Thank you very much.
You
Charity in Brighton. So Dr. Stratton Smith, I'll start with you. You know, every individual case of COVID is unique, but I think this is a good example of why people who sing, you know, are especially careful right now, because she's worried about the long-term effects and she had a quote-unquote mild case.
Yeah, I think it's a really great point that there's so much randomness around COVID. We've all heard the stories of young people being extremely sick, young adults. We've also heard stories of extreme elderly who got COVID and recovered well and did well. And certainly I've had a small percentage of my patients that have had it struggled the way Charity did, similar kind of thing, lingering symptoms. Many just recovered fine. But there's this randomness around COVID, and there's still this ongoing mystery as to why some people struggle so much and many folks don't. And so you're in a room with 50 people gathered together for a choral rehearsal. You know, it's very risky to look around the room and say, well, so-and-so in the bass section, they might have a bad case, but, you know, that alto, she'll be fine. You know, we just don't know. And so I think the abundance of caution that's been raised by this panel is, I think, the wisest course.
Professor Galvan, you shared maybe similar concerns about long-term damage that we just heard from Charity. So when you think about students who feel invincible, typically, I mean, I remember those days. What do you expect students to demand and expect, assuming they come back in the fall?
We've been in conversations, and the reality is they want to be in face-to-face classes. But the students, this summer I've been on committees trying to figure out, you know, we have a super sprayer group where we get together and talk about what we're going to be doing in musical theater and opera. But I think the students realize that school is not going to be what it was. And they're aware, some of them are aware of the effects. But to be honest, most of them have not been doing what I've been doing, which is reading every single day any bit of information that I can get my hands on. And some of them truly are unaware about what the long-term damage can be. And you're right. You know, I thought I was immortal at 20. I did some really stupid things, as I think a lot of us did. And it makes me nervous because they are coming from so many places, and I've already seen large groups of young people out being very close to one another. Now, I don't know if those people, if that's their cluster. You know, there are people who have formed clusters of trust, so maybe they're all roommates, and so like a family. Maybe that's what's going on. But I was at an outing last week with some really brilliant people. I was just going to walk in the park, but there were friends there, and you know, there were four people talking without masks. They were not 6 feet apart, and you know, my heart sort of went up into my throat. I'm finding myself being very skittish about that. And I was at Taganic Falls, beautiful walking trail, and I was scared to death the entire time. It was rather traumatizing because it's a narrow trail, and so many people were not wearing masks. And so I'm not doing that trail again. I'm going to the more deserted one. So, I think that the school, we're working very hard to establish protocol, entering one door, going out another, doing an accordion-type schedule where classes are alternated. We're looking on one committee at if we're spacing the desk, you know, so many feet apart, can that go? But these are all for courses where they are not singing or they're not doing the dramatic speaking that they do in theater. And mm-hmm. so at this point, my colleagues and I are not planning on doing any live rehearsals. And at this point, there are most places are not doing live performances because it's just too dangerous for your audience.
Harry in Rochester's next on the phone. Go ahead, Harry.
Yeah, hi. I've been interested in your discussion on singing. I truly enjoy it and express myself through song occasionally myself. And basically, in this conversation, many different facets of this whole, I guess, show that is going on. I can end it to so many things, but basically I know that your focus right now is song. Well, I think that, first of all, everybody sings and has sung. At the moment we take our first breath, we sing. And to inhibit that is really quite evident now with what is happening with the mask. You're inhibiting our breath. Now, to express that joy that we have of life, God gave us voices to express it. Not all of us, unfortunately, can do that. But everybody, whether maybe, it's, like I said, the breath of life, goes into that person. He says in the beginning, basically he says in Genesis 2:7, that he formed man of the dust of the ground, breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. What has happened? I came across some information from June 7th of 1912. There's actually a rule that people could not whistle on stagecoaches. Why do you think that is?
I don't really know how it connects to this, but go ahead.
It's in the Library of Congress. Now, why would they prohibit listening and not listening but whistling on stagecoaches? Because songs relay a message. And I think that is actually part of the agenda. You could actually call it a virus in 1912. You know why? Because the majority of people don't even know the virus that they're talking about is the second portion of the definition. Merriam-Webster's dictionary says second part of the definition of virus is poisoning of the soul or mind.
Well, I got to jump in here, Harry. I mean, look, I appreciate the historical context there. I want to return to what you said at the beginning of your comment, which is that, you know, we're essentially singing right when we're born here, and that it is a very natural thing to do. A lot of people who believe in God believe it's a God-given thing to do. If you believe that stuff, God didn't really give it to me, but I sing anyway. And Lee Wright, I want to ask you what you think the possible impact will be if this pandemic stretches well into 2021, and we are very limited in what we can do, particularly in the colder weather months in terms of performance, et cetera. What are you most concerned about, Lee? I mean, whether it's sort of the psychology of the members who aren't performing or the arts community impact at large, what concerns you the most right now, Lee?
Gosh, well, you know, at the top of the list has to be just our public health. That is the most important thing. And, you know, as everyone's said, and, you know, and Janet has brought up the long-term effects, and, you know, it's not worth singing together just because, you know, you feel you really need it. So, I think that we have to ride this out. We have to make music in ways that that are safe. And, of course, that, you know, of course there's going to be a variety of comfort levels among different people and according to different information. I mean, so far I have felt safe with the things I'm doing, but, you know, not everyone would feel safe. But I'm thinking, you know, for me personally now, I'm not going to be making music really close to anyone for a while. But I'm able to, and I guess, you know, my message to all the choral singers out there, who maybe before this only sang a couple times a week at rehearsals and maybe practiced a little bit at home, use this time to build your own skills, because we, you know, there's nothing taking away right now our God-given gift of song. We're not inhibited from singing. We may be inhibited from singing next to each other and in ensembles, but we can still sing, and that's what we should be doing.
Yeah, and I have to say, even Lee, I'm taken up for neighbors who sing. So I've got a neighbor who's very musical, and he is not only very musical in a lot of different ways, he's learning the flute, which is new. And Chris, if you're listening, I love it. I love hearing it. It is it is loud and proud. So whether you want to sing, you want to practice instruments in your neighborhoods, I think that's great, and I think neighbors should celebrate that. Brenda, we're down to about a minute or so. And so why don't you kind of give us some closing thoughts about maybe your concerns, but maybe your hope for the next, who knows, 3, 6, 9, 18 months, whatever this thing is.
Well, you know, I feel much more calm and patient about the whole thing. Having listened to Janet and the other guests here talking about to me, my own kid wants to be a choir director. He's in college studying choral conducting. And I think, oh, my gosh, this could change the trajectory of his life. And then I think, wow, he could be like a racehorse. So we've had those conversations at home that once he is allowed to do what he wants to do, It will be so glorious. And this is a time of preparation and thinking and getting ready and an exercise in character and patience for all of us. So we will get through it.
Hmm. 30 seconds from you, Janet Galvan. Final thoughts. Go ahead.
Well, here's what I'm thinking. Right now, it's a time for us to strengthen our programming. A lot of choir directors would do very well to study both the idiomatic and non-idiomatic works of Black composers. It's to strengthen our infrastructure and audience building. It's to learn, and there are ways to learn about and be involved in very meaningful ways. So thank you for the invitation.
Well, I want to thank all of our guests. Janet, thank you. Lee Wright, nice talking to you as always, and look forward to the day that we can see you again. But thank you, Lee, for being with us.
Thank you, Evan.
Wonderful, as always. Dr. Scott Stratton-Smith, thanks for the expertise and the perspective. Great stuff this hour.
Thank you.
And Brenda Tremblay, here at WXXI. We see some of our colleagues some of the time. I look forward to when we can see everybody a lot more, but it's nice to hear you here, Brenda.
Stay safe, Evan.
You got it. A wonderful conversation. And listeners, a lot of creative ideas, but I hope that you're staying safe and finding creative ways to commune, to sing, to make music. Thanks from the whole team here. Rob Braden is the engineer. Megan Mack is the producer. Barsook Records for the music. I'm Evan Dawson, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.